tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome to Quick Charge. It's Sunday, August 25th, 2024, and I'm your host, Joe Boris. I already know what you're thinking. It's Sunday. Why are we doing an episode of Quick Charge on Sunday? Well, the truth is we had some technical difficulties on Thursday, so we didn't get around to recording, despite the fact that we had a guest for the show. And that guest was Sean Ackley from Einride. And I wanted to make sure that we gave Sean every opportunity to come on the show and discuss what's going on in the world of electric semi-trucks and electric semi-truck charging through his company, Einride. Now, if you're not familiar with Einride, you really haven't been paying attention, because in recent months, they've ordered over 150 579 EVs from Peterbilt for their American semi-truck fleet. They've also deployed the largest autonomous electric truck fleet in the Middle East, along with their partner DP World, and they've opened the largest charging station for heavy-duty EVs powered by Volterra in Southern California. So they've been making big news and big waves all year, but we've actually been covering them since all the way back in 2021, when the company first showed this thing, an autonomous semi-truck. It's a Class 8 vehicle. There's nobody driving that thing. And that kind of boxy cargo area is in fact a container. And the way the concept worked was you'd have effectively a Class 8 electric semi-truck chassis that would pull up into the port, a container would be lowered onto it, and it would drive itself wherever it needed to go. No trailers, no fuss, no muss. And it's been a concept that people have been really taken by. A lot of people still think of this vehicle whenever they hear the word Einride. This is where I think we're going to start. So without further ado, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years. You'd think I'd be good at intros by now. Today's guest is Sean Ackley. Sean, you're the head of communications, but also charging infrastructure. You're the charging nerd, if you will, for Einride. And I don't mean to call you a nerd, but that's kind of how you introduced yourself to me. So
I did say that, and not to overcorrect, certainly not head of communications, but don't mind taking a call from Joe when I get a chance. So absolutely.
Well, I mean, if you're the only comms guy I talk to, that makes you the most important guy, right?
Careful. I can't take any titles today.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, you know, Einride is a really exciting company. You know, we've been following them on Electrek for a number of years, even before that heavy equipment podcast, Clean Technica. I've been writing about Einride for years. And I know you guys primarily as an autonomous vehicle play. Sure. Recently, we've seen more in the lines of big fleet purchases, 150 Freightliner eCascadias, among other electric vehicles. You guys are interesting, right? Because you're not an autonomy play. You're not strictly a shipping company. You're not a 3PL. Where would you say Einride's place is in the broader market?
Oh, yeah. Great question. And I also, self-admittedly, we talked about this earlier. I'm newer to the Einride family here. I joined back in January. And so not having a huge freight and logistics background, I'm a power guy. I'm still catching up to speed with all of the intricacies of the service portfolio that we offer. But at its core, we deliver a service. So we would call that sort of a capacity as a service model, where we own the truck, we buy charging, we deploy, we help shippers get product from A to B in a sustainable way and an electrified way at its core.
And that's really worth mentioning too, is that at the core of the business is electrification. This is not a shipping play. You're not Yellow Freight or anything like that. You are still providing shipping, still providing capacity, but you're doing it in a way that serves the broader ESG and decarbonization goals that, frankly, a lot of companies are implementing.
Oh, yeah. And not discounting ESG in any way, shape or form, but there's still a bit of a capitalist nature to what we do, right? So we have to figure out how to do this on parity, cost parity to a traditional operation, a traditional diesel service, and then still find a way to be profitable with every load that we deliver. So it's an interesting area, and that we found a way to do it is certainly what got me excited to come join the team.
You know, one of the things that we run into often when we talk to fleets, when we talk to commercial fleets, like in my other life that I do a lot of consulting with different fleet managers and fleet buyers, they talk about the chicken and the egg when they reference EV and charging, right? Do I buy an EV or do I put in charging first? Do I do them both at the same time? That means my upfront costs are really high. How does Einride lower that barrier to entry to fleets that want to electrify and that want to do business in that more sustainable way?
Sure. I think at its core, you're right. You know the ecosystem it requires to electrify anything within a fleet, a portion of a fleet, that the entire fleet. It requires the vehicle, it requires charging, it requires power, requires land. All these things can be very capitally intensive. If you're a large 3PL or if you're a small mom and pop fleet, the barrier to entry is cost. It's cash. And not only in that, the timelines that you mentioned, they're not perfectly parallel. So the time it could take to bring the power to a site, if you have the benefit of owning your own real estate or you have access to a long-term lease and you can modify your property and add power, the time it takes utility to bring ample power could be measured in years. And so, coming out of COVID, when EV supplies at dealer inventory or through the OEMs have improved, and so the lead times of trucks have gotten shorter, the laggard still remains time to power. But so time and money, certainly the two ingredients that make the most interesting soups today. What we have done is reduce that barrier to entry by owning the assets. So we own the trucks, we buy the charging, and we can deploy them in a service model. But the other piece that really has helped us be successful is in that we know that there is an ESG play, helping shippers deliver goods in a sustainable way. We also want to be cost effective, and it's very easy to see that when something's more expensive, you just have to use it more, right? So if a truck, let alone, can deliver less goods because it's 7,000 pounds heavier, maybe. And if you have to deliver more turns per day, you're going to need more energy to recharge the trucks midday, possibly, or possibly more trucks, right? Just right. More volume in general to match diesel parity. So if someone were a shipper or a carrier or a fleet operator were to look at that mathematically and say, oh, this doesn't make sense. And if I'm not regulated and forced to do it, I'm going to wait until all this gets cheaper. And what we've done is that we can buy those assets, we can help you deploy them, and we can, using some of our software capabilities, we can exactly calculate which routes you could electrify today, which ones are going to be the most efficient to run electrified, get the most turns out of it based on battery capacity of the truck, how much charging you can deploy, and we will perfectly right-size that deployment so that utilization hits a clip where we can do it at diesel parity. And that's our core focus going in, like that we're going in that fashion rather than working our way down to it as much as possible.
At the end of the day, your customer is interested in getting their stuff from A to B, and that's their prime thing. And they may have ESG goals, they may have everything else, but if they're not profitable, sure, they can't sustain. And we talk about that second type of sustainability. Can we sustain the planet? Can we sustain the business? It needs to do both in order to work.
Sure. Yeah. Now, if you're a CEO that's got a long career road ahead of you as a product manufacturer or a food and beverage company, you might be concerned about your consumer base growing over time. So yes, goals might be important to you, certainly. And then as consumers, we've seen the consumer shift in the global landscape. Retailers are paying attention that consumers want to buy something that's green or good for the environment or has less of an impact than maybe it did 30 years ago when they were still a fan of your product. So there's a keen interest to do things sustainably. Oh, and by the way, if you can do it on parity with what you're paying today, even better.
Yeah. And there's a ton of government incentives and utility incentives and even state incentives coming out to help reduce that cost. But I think there's still a lot of unknowns. There's still a lot of question marks hanging above fleet managers' heads and fleet buyers' heads. And what I like about your model, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that at the end of the day, you're taking on that responsibility, you're taking on that uncertainty, you're taking on that fear, and you're passing all of that certainty on to them, saying, look, for whatever reason, the truck is down, the technology's not working that day, we're still going to get your package from A to B and make it happen one way or another.
Sure. I feel like that's been kind of the crux of my career. Like I've moved to different parts of this industry over the last 10 years, roughly, and have been chasing sort of what is the problem we're solving here today? And the early problems were just sort of, this is mystical. This is a black box. I don't understand.
Oh, it's magic. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that was the sales pitch back then. It was, we'll demystify this for you. I don't know construction. Now that I understand, I need chargers and trucks. Well, I don't understand construction. Okay, we'll handle that. We'll be a general contractor. We'll hire EPCs. But the further you move along in the maturity of the market, as people are being exposed to it, even if they haven't dabbled in it or done, the dirty word, haven't done a pilot, they're growing in their understanding of what it takes to deploy. And the thing that they will run into as they understand is, subsidy is great. How do I get it? What can I apply for? How do I get me some of those NEVI funds, right? Like that, you know, some of this stuff doesn't translate perfectly for every modality. And then beyond that, once I've done all this math, wow, that's really expensive. I had a warehouse operations and logistics team whose budget didn't include electricity at this scale before. I've got to rework my entire internal commercial budgeting process for this now. How do I do that? We kind of try and take that off their plate. We'll handle it and feed it back to them in the way that they did consume the previous technology. You're paying for fuel, you're paying for trucks, you're paying for service and maintenance, all in a service model. That's kind of the formula for us right now.
Yeah. And I think that there is something that clicks in people's heads. Austin Energy, you know, we were talking about Amy Atchley, my good friend, Bobby Godsey as well, down in Austin Energy. They were one of the teams that early on when we were talking about electrification, and, you know, I got to credit where credit is due. Matt Teske, my former co-host, said the words, electricity is a fuel. So just think of it as electric fuel instead of liquid fuel. And Bobby and Amy got it immediately. And Austin Energy put out a huge campaign talking about electric fuel. And if you go to their website today, they talk about electric fuel. And I think once that light bulb went off over their head of like, oh, this is just fuel. It's just a different kind of fuel. I have to fuel up in a different way at a different time, but it's just fuel. I think a lot of people were able to start doing that kind of back of the napkin, back of the envelope math and saying, okay, this is no longer mysterious. I just need to think of it in a new way.
Sure. And I think that too, like if you start to reverse engineer their thought process, that you know they're going to go down that rabbit hole, they're going to chase. They go, well, what does a gallon of diesel cost me in fuel?
Yes.
$5. So now let's just take a California average, right? $5 a gallon. And okay, what is that in numbers of electrons? If I'm trying to think about this like a liquid volume, well, try kilowatt hours. And how many kilowatt hours are you basically burning in energy to achieve a mile? What's your mileage of efficiency running on diesel? And sort of match that up. And if you do all that math, you can, depending on, again, where you're buying fuel and how efficient the EV vehicle that you're operating is, somewhere between 25 and 45 cents a kilowatt hour is the price you might expect to be on price parity with a gallon of diesel. You start doing that math, you go, okay, well, that's what it costs. This is how many kilowatt hours I will consume to deliver this many goods or this many routes or this many miles. And then, okay, well, what is my capital cost to build infrastructure to get that fueling? If I'm going to do it myself, build my own gas station in the electric world. You start doing all that math and go, okay, now divide all that CapEx plus the electricity I'm going to buy for my utility at a wholesale rate or retail rate. And I average all that out over the term that I'm going to own the assets. And then you start going, oh my gosh, that's $1 a kilowatt hour. I can't achieve parity. So how do I do that? Then you might look, and there's a lot of lessons I've learned from the light duty vehicle space. You go, oh, someone else is building it, right? I don't build my own gas stations today. Why do I need to do that in an EV future? Who's building electric gas stations, electric charging stations, hubs off premise? They've got to figure out some factor of scale that I can benefit from as a consumer. And there's a lot of great companies that are out there building charging hubs today. They're just not as prolifically available, right? Out on the highway corridors that trucks drive today. So you can't rely on them without some sort of backup plan exclusively. But then you start to go and ask, well, what's the market rate of a kilowatt hour off those taps? And I guarantee you talk to any of those developers today, they're also sitting there with the pencil.
They're doing that math. Oh, yeah.
How do I get a kilowatt hour down to 35 cents a kilowatt hour retail? That's tough. It's very tough.
Oh, yeah. Well, but, you know, you start to see these different plans. You see these different solutions out there, whether it's a combination of solar, whether it's battery backup, whether it's BESS, where they fuel up the batteries, you know, overnight or whenever electricity is 6 cents a kilowatt hour. They charge it up and they do that. So there's a ton of solutions out there. You're absolutely right. And I think this is riveting stuff for our fleet people. I don't know that the consumer show is going to love it so much, but I think this is just absolutely riveting because, like, I have spreadsheets for this. I have pivot tables for this where it's like, oh, you're running two shifts. Oh, you're running a night shift. Well, what if you ran 2 day shifts, you know, switch that around and then you're buying, you're charging at this rate instead of this rate. All of a sudden you're at parity now. You stack the incentives on top of that. Now you're pocketing money. You're coming out ahead. And I think that's super important because, you know, we do have a driver shortage. We do have an operator shortage, not only in this country, but throughout North America. And one of the most exciting things about Einride is not the logistical stuff. It's not the figuring it all that out, even though that is the exciting stuff to fleet people, to people who are in the industry like you and I are. But the exciting stuff to people who don't care about any of that and don't want to do math, the exciting part is the robot trucks, the self-driving, the autonomy. Speak a little bit to that. I mean, because, you know, the renderings of this thing, they look like stormtroopers. They look awesome. It's like Star Wars type trucks.
They are cool. And if, all right, so for any listeners or viewers haven't searched NROAD before, maybe you have been exposed to sort of the light duty vehicle or the consumer space and haven't looked at trucking, go and search NROAD in just Google image search. This thing is cool. It absolutely steals the show. If we bring one to a trade show or if it's out in the proving grounds, it gets the attention. So the autonomous truck or the autonomous mule being able to deliver goods without a driver was probably the earliest inception that anyone's ever been exposed to NROAD, myself included, in that, you know, we do see a future where year over year, the growth, like we're still going to ship more goods every year. It's going to grow, let alone there being any attrition in the market from a driver perspective. It's going to continue to grow and it will outpace. And that's where we see a lot of job growth is just in the ability to grow faster than you could even feed in new drivers if you wanted to, let alone there being attrition in the market potentially.
Well, so and I think that's worth bringing up because this is going to fuel job growth. It's not going to steal anybody's jobs. There's nobody there to do the work now.
Right. No, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I've spent a lot of time in my career in talking about workforce development, just broad spectrum. And I think EV technologies are great for it. I used to work in a sort of a field construction environment doing like large power transformer and utility upgrade stuff, working with great field service professionals that have been working out in the field for 30 years in their career. And the amount of times I've had any of them turn to me going, EV is cool, but I'm not opening a laptop. I haven't had to do it for 30 years. Don't tell me I have to add that to my tool belt today. And I get it. But you see a passion to transform your career, maybe later in your career, and you want to find a way to maybe not have to travel, work in the elements. If you're a driver, that can be hard on your body, let alone just driving an EV truck is improving your state of health and state of your quality of life. Imagine now also working in a network operations center, managing fleets of autonomous vehicles with all of that institutional knowledge you have about if a road hazard were to occur, if something has changed in your logistics and routing requirements, if you need to step in, you have that institutional knowledge to participate. So there's job growth still happening, whether or not it autonomous or electrified, for even folks that are later in their career. Full stop.
That's such a great point. You know, we just on our last episode, we talked a little bit about Caterpillar and their remote operations for their heavy load dump trucks at their mining operations. They've got an operator sitting outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, lives with his family, gets to be near his kids at school. He's effectively going to remote in to these vehicles, and he can operate three or four different vehicles 2,000 miles away through his office simulator, the same way that, you know, I drive Gran Turismo, right? And he does it effectively. He does it safely, and he gets to be with his family every night. That is a game changer where if you want to be an operator, you want to be a driver, you can operate multiple machines and you just pick it up when it's time for you to pick it up. And when it's just going, you know, through the terminal or going over the road highway on a pretty much straight shot, it can handle that on its own. We just need you when we need you, and you can operate three or four trucks.
Yeah. What's interesting to me as I learn more about it is that, you know, we think of a piece of asphalt or a piece of concrete to be something that's constant, right? Over the my entire lifetime, a road is a road. The reality is these roads are not constant. There's deterioration, there's repair, there's constant shift. So there's gonna be a constant need to be scanning, updating, monitoring, and tracking the state of the route that you're gonna deploy, even if that route is something that's supposed to be repeated for the next 10 years, the same route, day in, day out. Those routes have a lot of variability and environmental impact. So there's going to be jobs, there's going to be important focus that's going to be required on the human resource side in the autonomous world for a long time to come.
That's such a smart way of putting it. That's probably why you have all those diplomas on the wall behind you.
Oh, are you kidding me? Those are coupons. So I'm going to trade one in later.
That's like in the office where Michael's got the Seiko certificate of authenticity on the wall.
I love it. I love it. No, just a couple of arrest records and no big deal. Nothing big back there.
This is the one where they had to the governor let you back into society.
Yeah, exactly. I'm allowed in. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I mean, I think all that stuff is great. I know there's a ton of questions there. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I know we're over time. For everybody who's watching this, listening to this, if they want to find out more about, I would pronounce it Einride because that's how it's spelled, but I guess it's Enride. What's the best way for them to follow along with what you're doing, for them to see these trucks, find out more about it?
Well, I would certainly reach out through our comms channel on our website, Enride or Einride, either way, no offense taken. Enride.tech, TECH. Go out and check it out. Learn more about us. Reach out on any social media platform you'd like. Send an email, send a smoke signal, a carrier pigeon. We don't care. Engage, ask questions. It's a cool technology area to be in and happy to share whenever we can.
Yeah, for sure. And then, the last thing I would say to this is, if you're a huge shipping operation, if you are moving, hundreds, thousands of tons of equipment a day, you definitely want to check this out. You want to see what these guys are doing. And if you're not, if you're a small operator, you're doing LTL, look at this also, because it might make sense for you if you're in an area here to check out what they're doing. Check out the kind of fleets they're operating. And if nothing else, right size your resources, because you may have six trucks in operation right now that are running with 50% load on a diesel, and you're trying to figure out how to make all this pencil. You might not need to carry those assets at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do reach out. I think that's a difficult position, being that we are in sort of a startup phase as we grow in maturity in our company. It's tough to reach everybody. And so many of our conversations start with, what is Enride? Who is Enride? You're the autonomous truck company. Yes, but there's so much more to share.
Yeah.
So if
Yes. And
you
we just ordered 150 e-Cascadias that dudes are going to drive.
Peterbilt, 150 Peterbilts. And then, as many BYDs as we have here in North America, let alone globally, it's so funny the amount of times I've had to explain, we're one of the largest Class 8 truck fleet operators in the US, full
Yeah.
stop.
So,
And
well, but let's talk about that for a minute, and I swear I'll let you go.
Oh,
So you got, no, this is going to be 16 more hours. You've got the new electric Pete's in there. You've got a great relationship with PACCAR. I know that I said e-Cascadia. That was incorrect. But I think you've probably got a few of those in the fleet as well coming. You have a pretty good sense of what's out there. And I think with BYD coming online, BYD is a new brand that a lot of people aren't familiar with, and they're kind of testing them out. What product out there? And I know that, and I'll cut this out if you don't like it. I'll edit this out
No,
because
this
we
is
do have
great.
editors.
Great. Happy to talk about that.
Of the different products that are out there, which are the ones that you think are ready for prime time right now? Because a lot of
Well,
people are excited about the Tesla. A lot of people are excited about Windrose. A lot of people are excited about the new Mack MD Electric, which I think is a great truck, but it's tough to get those. And if you are,
is the news coming back to the US market? Was it the N series is the electrified?
oh, Isuzu, yes.
Yeah.
No, well, all right. I love that little Isuzu N truck. I was in college, so now we're going back to the 90s, and I rented one of those as a U-Haul to move, right? So I had just gotten out of the military, I was going back to school, put everything in there because, like, no, now at this point, I've had a house for 4 years, the wife, the kid, I've got stuff to move. And I drove this little cab over Isuzu N series, and I thought it was great. I would drive that all day long over, like, a 350 Ram or a 3500 Ram or a 350
Sure.
Ford. It's got all the capability. It's super comfortable. It's easy to see. I could park
Easy to
it.
drive.
No, I love it. And I know that this is not going to supposed to be an Isuzu commercial, but they don't sell enough trucks to afford the sponsorship. So I'm going to just have to give them a charity kick here. That electric N series is going to be really tough to beat. I think that's going to be a phenomenal little box truck.
That's me personally being excited to see that come to the US market. I think that'll be very cool. No, but coming back to your point here, now we are, I would say, at its core, technology agnostic. I mean, what we deliver is that service, and we'll evaluate all the technologies available to us to deliver that service in the most optimized way. Again, achieving that parity, if not better, and delivering sustainable goods from A to B. Like a BYD ATT has a 200-mile range today. That we would say in Gen 2 or Gen 3 platform. And most carriers might go, well, that's not long enough. It needs to be longer. Well, for us, we can hyper focus in on, well, what routes are 200 miles and less, or how many routes can we turn within a 200-mile range before we need to recharge, and how quickly can we recharge? All that we're doing against the capabilities of each of these platforms.
All right, well, that just comes back to using the right tool for the right job. If you've got an 800-mile route this probably ain't it for you. But if you're doing 175 miles, 150 miles, you're doing that 3-4 times a day, you're foolish to not look at electric.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if it's repeatable, very forecastable, and you can predict exactly which roads you're going to take for the next 5 years.
Then we get the robot to do it.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's awesome. Sean, thank you so much for being on the show. This was awesome. Thanks for tuning in on a Sunday episode. Be sure to like and subscribe if you like what you heard so you don't miss any of the regularly scheduled episodes of Quick Charge coming to you Monday through Thursday.